All right, good morning, folks. Welcome back. Happy Friday. Yeah, the week is finally beginning to draw to a close. Some of us are looking forward to the Sabbath. But in any case, it's been a bombshell-busting week, all told, with a whole lot of stuff that I keep thinking back, guys. Not too long ago, just a few years back, people wouldn't have believed any of the stories that are now mesmerizing folks watching the three-ring circus, whether we're talking about Washington or the attempt to move towards war or just the stuff that's being peddled as economic goodness. So many places, it's a target-rich environment. So let me go to Tim first. He's on the phone this morning. And I say good morning, Tim. Also got Jeff Gilbert way down south, but let's say hi to Tim first and kick us off. Of all the stuff going on, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the idiocy around the Barr Inquisition.
Okay.
I think that I think Bill Barr is acquitting himself quite beautifully at everyone else's expense.
It's not hard to look intelligent in a room full of idiots that spout off their mouths. And if they just shut up, you know, and the old saying, better to be thought to be not quite so sharp than to open your mouth repeatedly and remove all doubt. And that's what's been going on, and especially in the House and via the tweets and so forth. But you're right. It's been quite a week.
But you know what's so funny is that it doesn't matter to the haters, because they don't think, they don't use rational deduction. And so whatever happens doesn't really matter, unless somebody, soils themselves. Nobody's going to care.
Well, you know, Tim, as I was watching this week and looking at all the, in your face hypocrisy surrounding Barr, demand his resignation, said nutcase after nutcase. And I'm thinking, you know what? After we watched Janet Reno execute a bunch of people in a church and get away with that, and they sanctified her, essentially, then you've got Eric, Mr. Fast and Furious Holder, who essentially tried to undermine the law by selling guns and running them to drug lords, connected drug lords, of course. So many others over the years.
He didn't try to. He succeeded.
Yeah, and he was held in contempt of Congress, rightfully, should have been jailed, but instead he went and got his reward with a big law firm. So many others of attorney generals of late that literally, I can't help but think all Barr needed to do to acquit himself with these folks was just go out and kill a few people in a church, and they'd have said, oh, he's okay now. He's one of us.
Well, you know, he has to kill the right people. He has to kill people that are, tax protesters or gun owners or something like that.
Well, that's easy enough to do. There's plenty of targets on their backs. So you're right. And ultimately, I think if there's any good news in this, it's that the level of screaming hypocrisy has been so exposed. And I haven't watched much of the hearings, of course. We don't do live TV, and I'm not missing that. I have seen some of the recordings. But, good grief. All you have to do is just watch these people, and it's very clear, who should keep their mouth shut rather than removing all doubt about their lack of intelligence quotient.
Well, you're certainly not missing much.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, let's go say good morning to Jeff, and he probably has something else that he wants to mention as well. I'm not sure you're spending a lot of time. By the way, I have 8 pages here of no-holds-barred candidates, especially those running for president, all demand resignation, so forth and so on. Honestly, guys, as I went through this bunch of spewing, I didn't see hardly a single quote that was worth actually repeating when I did the news shows. Go ahead, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Jeff.
It was really odd. The only piece of news that I really seemed to grab out of all the stacks and stacks and stacks of on the Barr testimony and stuff is that apparently he never even read it before he made determinations on there being obstruction or not. I think that's kind of interesting. There's a whole lot of effort that went into this document, and he didn't even read it before he made his determination, which causes a lot of uproar from the other side.
Okay, now that one I have not, I haven't seen that emphasized. I'm sure if it, okay, so let's,
let me,
what
let
I
me,
did see,
let me
yeah.
read, let me read what it says then. Revelation came during a line of questioning led by Democratic Senator Kamala Harris.
Oh, there's a paragon of virtue.
Who pressed Barr on what evidence he reviewed before determining that there was not sufficient evidence to charge President with obstruction. Barr noted that not only his office was not the only one to make the, Barr noted that he was not the only one to make this determination, stating that, to his knowledge, outgoing Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein did not review the underlying materials, nor did other staffers in his executive office. So I thought it was interesting that
there's a difference between reviewing the underlying documents and reading from the report, which exonerates the president.
Exactly. Right. I was going to make the same point.
He read the cliff notes that were attached to the report, but didn't read the report. So they're making a big stink out of that.
He doesn't need the report to make his summary public. That's all he needed to do. He is not retrying the case. He is simply saying what Mueller said.
And
Mueller said, no collusion, no obstruction.
And you can look at a summary and ascertain that it's full of you-know-what. Let me give you another example, Jeff, that I think goes closer to the heart of the matter. That letter that Mueller wrote to Barr, it was another deep state leak. And essentially, what they claimed was, the sainted Mueller was all upset that Barr had mischaracterized his witch hunt. And it failed to, quote, fully capture the context, nature, and substance of Mueller's work. But what they failed to note in the summaries that were published by the deep state parrots was that when Barr pressed Mueller, these are from recordings and stuff, on whether he thought Barr's memo to Congress was inaccurate, Mueller said he didn't think that it was. And in fact,
he said he also was not, not misleading.
Exactly.
Mueller also said he was not misleading. He's simply, when you give the summary, you don't have to give an entire book report. All you have to say is, like Woody Allen said about War and Peace, it's about some Russians.
Yeah.
Well, and furthermore, Mueller even said that he felt that it was the media coverage that was misinterpreting the investigation. And he was angry with the coverage, and guess what? Primary among the leakers and the top of the heap, the WAPO and the New York Times. As Zero had said, the irony, it burns. So this is the kind of, pardon my bluntness, the crap that is being spewed out about this nothing burger of a report. The truth of the matter is, there was a 2-year smokescreen used by a guy, Mueller, who was knee-deep in Uranium One and real Russia collusion that was all about covering up their criminal, well, in fact, treasonous high crimes and misdemeanors and trying to paint them on the other guy. And it's right out of Hitler's Mein Kampf big lie playbook.
What do you have to say about that?
Yeah. Hey, like I said, I was just showing the report, the article that that basically brings up not only did he not read it, but not only did his, but the also the outgoing deputy director didn't read it, nor his staff read it. And I'm just saying that just causes problems.
I didn't read it either, Jeff, and I'm proud of that. Okay? I can look at the summary.
And you know what? Once again, let's get to the heart of this. It doesn't matter because it doesn't change what was in the report. And it doesn't change what he reported about the report.
Exactly.
And it doesn't change anything
in
the redacted report that they put out.
And it doesn't change that there were no crimes.
But even if they had stated they had read it, they would have come up with something else to complain about.
Exactly.
So I understand what you're saying.
Well, okay, one more quote, I guess, before I'd suggest we move on. This one was funny, at least. Now, it's not the people demanding his resignation. There's page after page of that. And again, we don't need no stinking evidence. But I did like this one. I saw the clip. Da Nang Dick Blumenthal is the guy who basically bashed Barr and then said, this is precious, I think history will judge you harshly. says the guy who has made a career out of being such a liar that he earned the nickname Da Nang Dick for his military cover-ups and whoppers. Replied Barr, I'm not in the business of determining if lies were told to the American people, Barr said, because, he'd be in full-time job mode just right there in that particular chamber. Instead, he said, I'm in the business of determining if crimes were committed. And that, I think, is probably the line that sent shivers through literally all of the people that were well, so upset about the fact that no crimes were committed by the president, but there was treason en masse by Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, yes, Mueller, Obama, Hillary et al., and a whole bunch of others, like Nelly Orr that we heard about this week. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that Barr said, which kind of, you're talking about shivers, as he mentioned that there was spying and there were other crimes, he also mentioned that other indictments were being prepared. And that didn't sound like they were being prepared for members of the Trump administration, but for people mentioned in the Mueller report. So it's going to be very fun to watch to see if, of course, I'm a skeptic. I don't believe the Democrats are capable of committing crimes under the Constitution because they never are charged with any.
You would think so.
It would be really fun to see how this comes out. And I, for one, am really getting some kind of encouragement, and I'm not big on encouragement, but okay. I'm getting a little encouragement that Hillary's 900 FBI files have kind of worn themselves out, and her rogue buddies at the FBI, and that's from Mueller to Comey to McCabe to everyone else, some of them are gone, even Rosenstein.
Good riddance.
As of the 11th. And I'm thinking that perhaps her foundation is crumbling, and it would be just so much fun to see her actually have to, I shouldn't say that, to see her clear her name in court. I think that's what she needs to do. I think she needs to clear her name in court because so many things have been said about poor Hillary.
Yeah. And hey, so many things haven't been said that should be. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
We got a new Hillary in the news, and that is, this is what she's reported as saying. Now, according to the Mueller report, it's not conspiracy when it's done out in the open. So then she goes and says that, China, if you're listening, go ahead and find Trump's tax reports and publish them. And if you can't get them through other sources, then go ahead and hack the,
I'll leak them to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something. She said, within hours, all of a sudden, the IRS offices are bombarded with incredibly sophisticated cyber tools looking for Trump's tax returns and extract them and then pass them to whoever WikiLeaks happens to be, is what she said. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That sounds like breaking the law.
Well, no, it's, asking listen to what she said. There's
asking
nothing.
A foreign nation to hack, U.S., resources in order to get a tax return?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's.
And it's funny that she went to her buddies in China.
Yeah,
exactly. And not her buddies in Russia.
She's got the contacts. I can't help but think, you know what? What she should do is ask the NSA to release their copies of her emails that the FBI allowed to be destroyed, that are on the server.
Or ask the Chinese to do it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've got them.
In fairness, if you remember during the debates, Trump asked the Russians to release Hillary's emails. But I remember laughing about it because long before Trump said it on the debates, I had been noting for months that since they were all up on an unsecured server anyway, not only did China, Russia, and probably Israel, Britain, Germany, France, and most of our allies, but a bunch of 13-year-olds in basements that were probably hacking the things, all had Hillary's emails.
Yeah, the next door neighbor to these guys with the bathroom server probably had it.
So
the password was probably Hillary
1234 5.
That.
Yeah, or Crimes Are Us or something. Maybe Omerta.
Well, I know. I got spooked by that whole thing and changed my passwords from password to password one.
There you go. Okay, well, that's wise. You can't be too careful now.
Now it's secure. That's right.
Yeah, right.
All right, well,
nobody tell anybody now, okay? Keep that a secret. Don't tell anybody his password.
We alluded to this, but I need to make sure we flesh it out just a bit. Congressional Republicans also said a number of stories this week are looking to finalize a criminal referral for one of the linchpins in Russiagate, Nelly Orr, and she's got her own emails. The wife of number four at the Department of Justice in the Obama regime, Bruce Orr. So this is one of those things that probably sent some shivers, too, because Nellie knows where the bodies are buried. She probably buried a few of them, and she is knee-deep in it. This is one of the ways that the prosecutors, at least back when we used to have a rule of law, would work their way up the chain. from the, you know, second tier of lieutenants up to the commies and their like, as the wheels come off the wagon. Overnight, there were a number of stories about how Trump has openly said now that Comey probably ran the spying operation. And he's actually said, and he's been saying this for a while, so I wish we'll get to it, that he will declassify everything about the warrants, the Star Chamber stuff that Obama used to spy on his campaign, and he said it'll be bigger than Watergate. Now, we've all been saying that for a long time, because all of that's true, but it would be nice if Trump would follow through on it now.
Well, Assange has been saying the same thing, too.
If they don't kill him, he might get a chance
to come from WikiLeaks today.
Yeah. I have a suspicion the real battle with Assange, and of course he was he's fighting extradition, or maybe he's not, but that's also coming to a head this week. He was the Brits essentially showed him what British justice has become earlier in the week, and others are now saying, well, you know, if he gets extradited, it's life and death for journalism, because that will be a message to the few remaining honest journalists in the world, right? You can count them on two hands, probably. That if you do what Assange did and blow the whistle on the deep state, you could probably end up dead. Ask Michael Hastings.
Well, that of course can happen and has happened in the past, but you know, the official death warrant is different from simply showing up dead on a sidewalk somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
Now the other thing is that Trump could make a real great case for the First Amendment if he waits till Assange is convicted and then pardons him. I think that would be a wonderful move on his part.
Well, he should, for sure. And you have a good point. I don't think there's any doubt that the man should be pardoned. And the question is, if they get him in the United States, will he survive to be convicted to be pardoned?
Well, he may not survive the trip.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, we have to take that chance because that's how it works.
Yeah, he might not be quite as wild about that option, but there you go. Okay, guys, if we're ready to move on, I have to suggest that in spite of all the bombshells that have been dropped earlier in the week, probably the biggest one came from two Facebook, Instagram, and some of the others. Now, this is another one of these. We knew it was coming. It's been real obvious. Alex Jones, who calls himself the tip of the spear, has taken one for the team. He's been deplatformed, various types of payer systems. I'm not sure if PayPal was one of them probably, but lots of others, that are connected with the Big Brother public-private partnership have been trying to shut him off and not allow him to, you know, continue to fund his operations. Facebook among those that have deplatformed them. But overnight, the big bomb was dropped when Facebook literally deplatformed not only Alex Jones and all of his people, but Paul Joseph Watson, Laura Loomer, a whole bunch of other conservatives, Mike Cernovich and the like. They even, I guess to kind of sweeten the pot and make the claim that they're not political, they deplatformed Louis Farrakhan, called him a conservative, evidently, and all of them were instantly gone. And then, as Breitbart put it, perhaps the most chilling thing of all to show how far gone it is, they threatened to deplatform everybody who links to them or talks about how bad it is what they've done. So there you go. Go ahead, Jeff. I heard you in there.
Once again.
Oh, okay,
it's
Tim.
It's private.
Yeah.
It's a private outfit, and they offer their services for free, and they can do whatever the heck they want.
Yeah.
So can somebody else that can figure out how to migrate your files from Facebook, and everybody would go to that new platform.
And it's, you know, it's I guess you could say the same thing. IG Farben was private. And a whole bunch of other companies are private. Monsanto is private. They just seem to have their tentacles in a whole lot of places. And the same thing goes for the pharmaceutical companies and the big vaccine scare of a late, you know, going to vaccinate you for measles. That's a private company. Hey, can't they strap you to a gurney and violate you and then decide to charge you for it, even if it's Big Brother's troops that are the ones holding the guns and strapping you down? My problem with all of that, Tim, is that you're correct to a point. The insidious evil of the public-private partnership, a.k.a. fascism, is there's really no such thing as private when the privates run the public and vice versa, and you can't tell where one ends and the other begins. And that's particularly true with the payment systems, the PayPals and the like.
Well, you know, private services can service whom they wish. And if they are an arm of the Democrat Party, that so be it. The funny thing is that nobody has come up with a way to migrate your Facebook files, which are yours, to some other platform.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're not really yours. Neither is your body, yours. Of course.
Yeah,
New York has proven that's not your body.
Facebook, it is no longer yours.
It does not belong to Facebook. They can use it, but they can't prohibit your use of it.
Well, right. I think
can't,
the truth
they
is
can't it's your use of it, but you have given them unrestricted rights to it once you put it up on their site, because that's in their
right. But
contract.
Of course, but if you take those unrestricted rights that they've got and you pull all your stuff and put it on some other platform and you do nothing more with it, Facebook is sitting on a dead horse. It doesn't matter. Now, what Facebook has probably done is embed some code in those files that is proprietary, and then you won't be able to steal it. But there may also be a way to, you know, to encode those photos and turn the text into text and migrate it that way. But if somebody does it, everybody's going to go to the new platform, provided they don't turn into the next Facebook.
Well, they all will. That's the thing. I mean, as soon as you get into advertising dollars, you're going to be stuck with it.
I go a step further and think one of the reasons why Facebook is Facebook and Gulag is Gulag is because they had the right contracts with the right people in the right deep state intelligence organizations, and they got access to DARPA technology and some of those kind of things. It's one hand washes the other, and again, the insidious nature of the public-private partnership is it's public when it suits them, and it's private when it suits them. And it's always bugged me that if you have a masterpiece cake shop, you're not private. But Two Facebook is, even though they're sucking at the public teat. So you can.
It's a very good point that you're making, and it's where the courts have gone as well.
Thank goodness we're not in India. If you happen to have the wrong potato in your ground, you can get sued.
They were suing farmers in America, Jeff, for growing Monsanto crops. Even though they didn't want the crap contaminating their fields. So you had literally cases, lawsuits years ago where Monsanto went after farmers that had their fields contaminated by genetically modified frankincorn. The farmers didn't want it, and Monsanto sued them and said, "You stole our corn. We found our DNA in your corn." And rather than having the courts say, "Well, Monsanto, you owe this farmer reparations for damages for having contaminated his formerly clean crop," no, they made them pay. And, you know, again, it's all about who runs the
courts.
Go ahead.
I couldn't believe it when I heard about that case. And you're reporting it correctly. The downwind farmers who had nothing to do with the pollution from the upwind, Monsanto, growers, first off, their privacy was violated when the DNA samples were taken from their corn.
Yeah.
But secondly, they have no responsibility for the pollution from somewhere else. On the other hand, if you have a hometown judge, you can get anything that you want. And that's what they did.
The bottom line, Tim, is that what we're seeing here is what happens in a nation where, whether you're talking about the highest offices in the land or those that want to be king, all the way down to the local farmers, there is no rule of law except that which can be bought and paid for via the, wash my back, I'll wash yours standard of he who has, well, we no longer have gold, he who has the fake money makes the rules.
Well, hence the Constitution and the limits on government that we're supposed to be honoring.
What a cool concept.
And when we don't, we get this.
Government
when we have a democracy, we get this.
Yep. So I guess to kind of take us to the break, I saw a piece earlier in the week from J.D. Hayes. Natural News has been big on this because they've been deplatformed for telling people about the public-private partnership that is pushing measles vaccines and mandating people to take it. So it's all about deplatforming. But that takes us to the break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Drive Time Friday with your hosts, Mark Call, and myself, Jeff Gilbert, and with us Tim today, Tim Kearns. Good to have you again, Tim. And guys, as we open up this side, I want to throw something out. Whether we stay there or not, it's up to you guys. But global climate change, some pretty interesting news came out. Believe it or not, it's in the Scientific American. And it says that, we've been in a global climate change for 100 years. Actually, longer than we've been polluting the air with our current industrial complex. It looks like that starting in the 1950s, the warming trend started to slow down, and we actually slowed down the warming trend by introducing particulate matter into the air, augmenting the cooling that they were, so forth, so on. So anyhow, I think it's very interesting that out of the blue, Scientific American posts something that really undermines quite a bit of the current global climate change argument.
Let me understand this, Jeff. So what you're saying is that amazingly, shockingly, Scientific American actually tried to publish real science and point out a little bit of debunking of the pseudoscientific crap that we've been fed for so long. By the way, on the same line, I saw a story out of Mike Adams in Natural News, I believe it was, noting that even NASA has come out and said, you know what, plants need CO2 to live, and more CO2 has meant more greening of the planet. And amazing. Who could have imagined real science would actually break out even at NASA in some places where it's been suppressed for so long?
The article goes on to say, the study finds that although the influence of global warming becomes clear early on in the record, the effect begins to decline starting around 1950. So global warming has been on the decline because of the increased aerosols in the atmosphere starting in the 50s, mainly pollutants introduced by industrial activities.
Chemtrails? They're not going to go that far, of course.
It looks like we have actually helped the nations, the world's island populations from going extinct already because of our industrial pollution.
Okay. Well, I thought the CO2 stuff was actually more interesting because CO2 is not a pollutant at all. This is something that is essential to life. So in any case, it is encouraging
pretty
to see a little
insane
science.
It's insane for the government to even think to classify carbon dioxide as being a pollutant. I mean, you can't get more insane than that, I think.
Oh, no. They'll be banning dihydrogen oxide here pretty quick.
Dihydrogen oxide. Woo! Everybody's like, wait a minute. What does that mean? Water, folks.
Yeah. All right, Tim. You haven't weighed in. Do so if you want, or take us in wherever you want to go, because there's plenty of other places in this target-rich environment.
Well, aside from the racially charged arguments against what we all know as climate change, there are way too many other pieces of news coming out that are range from good news to just hilarious. On the good news side, and I will grant you all the little things that go into the unemployment numbers, but since the errors are in all the reports all the time, it's still a useful indicator.
They lie, but they consistently lie.
They're consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
as long as the lies
absolute,
are consistent.
As long as the errors are consistent throughout the reporting, then the errors don't matter as much. It's like talking about pre-inflation and post-inflation. If you're going to, you're going to put a business plan together for the future and you say, we're going to assume inflation is 4%. Well, why do you bother assuming anything? Why are you ginning up the numbers at 4%? Just put them in today's numbers and whatever happens, happens. That would be the simple way to do it. But no, business schools don't know the difference. Believe me, I've spent plenty of time in them,
okay,
both as a student and a teacher.
Well, and just
so anyway, looking at the unemployment numbers, the unemployment hasn't been this low since I graduated high school. So that tells you that, and unlike some idiots in Congress who say, well, that's because people have two jobs, which has nothing to do with it. Other than that, I would say that that's still good news. I think we need to deregulate some more so we can create more jobs. Because as it is, we don't have the mobility right now. Companies are screaming for employees. They can't get them. And then when they get them, they can't use them because we're held back. There's still more opportunity in other countries for the technically literate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and what you're referring to, of course, is, among other statistical sleights of hand, is the primary culprit is something called the birth-death model, where Big Brother literally just makes up some jobs and says, oh, we think maybe 100,000 new jobs were created this month by new companies that we don't know are actually out there, but we think they are. So there's the Kentucky windage part. I will play a little bit of devil's advocate. Because the guy that I have most respect for in his company, Shadow Stats, is John Williams, of course. And he basically said a number of things. This came out before the jobs data overnight. But he did say the initial first quarter GDP estimate, 2019, was not credible. And that the downturn has just begun. Recession remains in play. The FOMC, of course, the Fed's open market masters of the universe met this week. And essentially they did nothing, which was kind of what was expected. But the reports aftermath evidently suggested, we probably aren't going to ease as much as we jawboned that we might. So, there was some postpartum anxiety there. But Williams goes on to talk about, literally, there were a number of things in the first quarter GDP report that may have topped consensus forecasts, but the problem is only 2 months of first quarter trade deficit data were available, and usually they use 3 months. The government shutdown reporting is still rearing its ugly head. In other words, they don't have data, so they're making some of it up, essentially, and that if they had had the data, he believes, things wouldn't have looked quite as rosy on the growth front as they're claiming. Now, one of the things I've noted for years is growth, of course, is often confused with inflation. And if you underreport inflation, you can make growth look that much better by precisely the same amount that you lie about inflation. So if you got 1% more inflation really than is reported, GDP looks 1% better. Tim?
Well, that can all be true, but the fact is too that when you look back, you notice that 3 months after the reports, whether they're good or bad, they'll say, oh, by the way, we revised those numbers by 80,000 people or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
That does make a difference, but the damage has already been done, or the good news has already come out, or however you want to look at it.
Yeah, the spin's in place, and nobody goes back and says, ooh, we shouldn't have been quite so optimistic or whatever.
The other thing that hasn't really hit the fan yet is the stop in deliveries of the 737 MAX from Boeing. Boeing is our largest exporter by far, and they have essentially stopped exporting. So we're going to have some trade deficits through the roof for artificial reasons again. But you watch when those hit the fan, we're going to have some wonderful news for the Rachel Maddows of the world.
And the other thing, of course, with respect to the jobs data, the same thing is true. Economists will sometimes punt by saying, oh, those are one-offs. In other words, well, that happened this month. This other disaster happened, but it's a one-off. It's not going to happen again. So we're going to ignore the data because we don't like it.
Well, President Reagan cured what they called inflation, which isn't inflation, but was the increase in the consumer price index. He cured inflation fairly early in his term by simply declaring that housing prices would no longer be included because they had been going through the roof. And he said, well, what's one of the big components? And they said, well, housing prices. He says, fine, leave them out. Boom, inflation is cured. Just like that.
And then later on,
inflation is just the printing of money.
And later on, they did the same thing with hedonics. That's one of my personal favorites, okay? This year's car is so much better than last year's car because we added all these initial government mandates, airbags or whatever it might be that we've decided decreed is what you must have. And because that makes the car better by 10%, well, even though the price went up by 20%, it's only 10% higher and so forth.
They're, to my knowledge, they don't do that. You can buy television sets. I mean, a 19-inch color TV.
Well, TVs are probably one of the places where where there is some truth to the hedonics are. It's not like hedonics is completely false. It's just that it's entirely subjective.
Well, this is one of the things that you have to keep in mind. But as I pointed out, as you go year over year over year, if you keep the rules essentially the same, you will get a trend, and you need to look at those. Now, the Fed talked about raising rates 0.25%. Now, that doesn't sound like very much, going from 2 to 2.25%. But if you think about it, 0.25% from 2 to 2.25 is actually a 12.5% increase.
That's right.
Now you're talking, now you understand why it stops things in their tracks. Because
just
you get
talking
a 12.5% increase overnight. Yeah, when you see a 12.5% cost of money increase overnight, you start to realize you better not be buying all that frivolous stuff.
Or even that stuff that you need.
Well, and you change your criteria. You change your criteria for lending. And you change your payback dates and your payback rates.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you take away the things that would be good, steady increases, and you will fund only the things that look like moonshots. And guess what? Most moonshots fail financially. So you end up displacing investment from good conservative investment that might make, you know, that probably will make money, but small amounts, to financing only those things that are going to make tons of money, but they probably will fail. So
and what
you displace the whole economy.
And what you're really talking about, Tim, I will suggest is the argument against the existence of the unconstitutional Fed in the first place. Back when we had a real economy and real money, it was the market, if you will, that set interest rates, and now it's the manipulation mm-hmm. that sets it. And, you know, having dealt with it myself, funding programs through big technological companies like IBM and some other storage companies that we're both very well familiar with, what's called the hurdle rate. In other words, the corporation says if a return on investment for this potential program is less than fill in the blank, it was 10% for a long time, then we're not interested. But on the other hand, if money
exactly.
is cheap, they will invest in all kinds of things that wouldn't be productive if money actually cost what it really did. A big example was the oil shale boom and a number of things that are only profitable with oil at $100 a barrel. But as oil goes under the price at which it's now profitable, oops, there was a whole lot of what the economists, the good ones anyway, the Austrians especially, called malinvestments. Investments that never would have been made in an honest economy, but did get made because Big Brother was subsidizing them or discouraging really productive investments or what have you. And the problem is, and Trump
absolutely.
Is dealing with this, it takes years, if not decades, to undo all of the evil because of transient effects that were put in place. Once you close a factory, it's real hard to bring it back after it's been dismantled and what's left of the capital equipment's been shipped to communist China.
Well, to your point, one of the things prior to the fiat money that we initiated with the Fed in 1913, if you look at commodity prices, and I have done this, if you look at commodity prices just after the Revolutionary War and in 1910, they're very similar.
Yep.
They didn't change much for 120, 130 years. Now, a penny then is a dollar now. So you've got 100 times inflation now, which is why your $6,000 house costs $600,000.
Well, and I had this discussion with a friend just the other day talking about he wanted to buy a security device, essentially a nice steel drill-resistant box to put on, a locking mechanism. And the same thing mm-hmm. that I remembered buying for 70 years, for 70 bucks only a couple of years back, was now about four times that amount. And he was amazed mm-hmm. and disgusted. And the problem is, and here's part of the issue with hedonics and substitution and other ways of lying about inflation. You know, you go buy a box of cereal, it's the same size as the box was a year ago, but it's only two-thirds full. because they've cut the amount inside there so people don't notice it. Well, if you look at quality things, to your point, commodities, things like steel, and not just cheap steel, but the really good high-grade steel that used to be involved in, you know, manufacturing high-end, even bicycles and some of that kind of stuff, chrome moly steel, those kind of things have literally gone through the roof. But because the manipulators of the inflation indices can say, well, we're not going to use the same grade of steel, or those selling it say, well, we're just going to cheapen the product. Hey, Americans are dumb. They won't notice that it doesn't last as long or that it's not resistant to those thieves that know that they can now drill into it, whereas they couldn't a few years back, and so forth.
Well, it worked great when they built the Titanic. That's all I can say.
All right. Well, in other words, you're saying it wasn't new. But, of course, if you think about it, the Titanic was sunk, suggests the conspiracy theorists, in part to get rid of those people that were going to blow the whistle on the Federal Reserve they wanted to put in place.
That's a long shot.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
What the heck?
Well, you can't prove it, and the ones who knew better are all dead by now. And just like you can't prove that there really wasn't a magic bullet, it's just that it strains credulity for some of us. All right. Hey, speaking of strange credulity, I do want to do this before we're out, because the other big news this week was the coup that wasn't in Venezuela. And this one is mind-boggling for a number of reasons. I saw a great piece courtesy of Lou Rockwell. Guaido got snookered. And essentially, if you remember the story, he got on TV or Facebook or whatever it was, and he said, let's have a revolution. And a whole lot of, well, it sounds like CIA-influenced senior Maduro officials had said they were going to change sides. Okay, you pull the plug on the regime, we'll go with you. Yeah, trust us, have we ever lied to you before? And it turns out within about 24 hours, things did not unfold according to plan. You had Pompeo and Bolton and the other neocons essentially saying, oh, this wasn't supposed to have come out this way. Just as we thought was going to happen, well, Elliot Abrams, convicted criminal Iran-Contra guy, and the neocon that was the architect of the Iraq War, all of them. And he, by the way, was the special envoy to Venezuela. Stunned, I tell you, that the revolution didn't come off as planned. Now, here's the part I love. This
and Guaido.
Go ahead.
Guaido is going to prison, and Mike Pence is hung out to dry.
So it didn't come off as planned. And are there or are there not nuclear missiles from Russia in Venezuela? You know, inquiring minds want to know. I don't think we'll ever get the truth there, at least not until they get fired. Some in Congress say yes, some say no, and I have no inside information. I did think there were two lines I wanted to throw out here. A former unnamed U.S. diplomat who would talk only on background was quoted by McClatchy, said he'd known about the Guaido plans for an uprising 10 days before it happened, and he said, quote, if I knew it, then everyone knew it. Maduro and his regime saw it coming. They were prepared. The regime probably even knew the people in the government that, you know, the CIA and others were talking to and probably even approved of it. So did they set a trap? Here's the funny line. Now, this is one of those where you go, okay, is it not just 3D chess, but 17-dimensional chess that's being played here? I'm a little skeptical on that front anymore, too. Bolton, Pompeo, Abrams, and of course, if he's really in control, and I'm not sure, Donald Trump said a piece from one of the, well, let's just say not neocon sources reviewing this, have been exposed as buffoons who, despite powerful positions, couldn't even organize a simple coup. The diplomatic corps will joke about this debacle for the next decade, and I'm thinking, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. Here's the bigger story, folks. Ponder the irony. Pompeo, Abrams, Bolton couldn't organize a simple coup, and I guess you'd have to say this week, neither could Mueller, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, Obama, and Hitlery. So we got coups failing all over the place. What do you make of that?
Well, I can tell you that Blackwater wants to get in on it. Apparently, Guardi has already spoken with Blackwater. So we'll see if Eric Prince gets his way. He's trying to hire 5,000 new mercs to go into Venezuela. So we'll see what happens.
That'll improve
there.
The job numbers. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, it will.
So will a war. Tim, any comment on that?
Yeah, I'm looking at, you know, Maduro certainly is not a friend of the United States. And he's very robustly backed by the Cubans and the Russians. And that gives me more indication that he's not a big buddy.
Okay.
On the other hand, Guaido has is no better. The only difference, in his philosophy is that he's not Maduro.
Hey, wait a second. How many I'll ask you a historic question, Tim. Thinking back about regime change and good guys that the U.S. has funded and put in power from, I don't know, you could probably say the Shah, certainly people like Saddam Hussein and good buddies of the Bush regime, any number of others, Muammar Gaddafi, all kinds of people, the entire Mideast Spring thing, Islamic Spring, you name it. So many regimes that were supposed to be so wonderful that we've sponsored and had other people overthrown. I can't think of a one that's worked out. Can you?
Well, the only successful ones that I can recall are the Shah and Morsi. You know, the Shah in Iran and Morsi in Egypt. And those were definitely coups sponsored by the United States, whether you agreed with them or not, or whether you thought it was a good idea or not. You look at this and you say, well, what did we get out of it? And we didn't get anything out of it. We shouldn't have done it in the first darn place. Now, when you had a Cuban Missile Crisis and you had missiles in Cuba, that's a different deal. We sponsored the Bay of Pigs, but Bobby Kennedy shut that down and gave Castro all the resistance, who ended up dying in prison. So, you know, Bobby Kennedy was definitely on the side of Fidel Castro at that point. Although he would justify it, or he would rationalize it, as saying that he was working with, you know, he was working with the offices as opposed to the individuals. So Bobby Kennedy was simply preserving order and going against the coup, when in fact he was really just supporting Castro.
Yeah, history's
but one of the only times we've had a good a decent coup in favor of the United States, or with the results that we wanted, were Hillary's coup with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and Eisenhower's with the Shah.
Well, you know, we have the same thing going on today right now in Venezuela. You know, you've got back in December, we've had several bombers, Tu-160s, land from Russia, and some are saying that Venezuela has nuke weapons now. Kremlin has also given billions of dollars to Venezuela, by the way, for their oil. So if we can get Guaido in the in office, then the U.S. gets all their future business. If we can't get Guaido in office, then Russia gets all their future business, and we have another Cuban Missile Crisis happening, because Caracas, they're saying, has nuke missiles now.
Well, no doubt about the fact that it's strategically a big issue, and of course, let's not forget, Venezuela is one of the most oil-rich countries on planet Earth, so it's a huge prize for whichever imperialist power gets to take it over and then mismanage it. Go ahead, Tim, take us out.
And of course, if we have not quarantined the Venezuelan export of oil, we wouldn't be in this mess in the first place, and your gas wouldn't cost you $4.50 a gallon.
Four and a half? That's cheap. We pay a lot more than that here.
Well, but you got a socialist state that you live in, and they're even more further down the road than America is in some respects. All right. Yeah. We got less than 20 seconds left. I guess I'll mention one last thing. We don't have time to talk about it, but Trump pulled out of the UN arms trade treaty that essentially is preparing for a UN disarmament invasion. And honestly, given the level of chicanery going on here, I think that's a good thing, but I'm not always so sanguine about the fact that there isn't still even there a hidden agenda that we're not being told about. So bottom line, a whole lot of stuff going on, and lots of lying about it. It just gets worse. Thanks, guys. Shabbat shalom, folks.